I'd like to call the meeting to order, please. Hi, Mark. You don't have to put that on there. Would you all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Carol, could you call roll call, please? Mm-hmm.
President Graves?
Here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Treasurer Dawson?
Here.
Director Pifo?
Here.
Director Tatro?
Here.
Thank you. Public comments. This is public comments. This is a time when those in the public have 3 minutes to talk about items that are not listed as agenda items tonight. If you do, would you please come forward and speak to the podium?
About 3 years ago, I asked for the same thing that I'm going to ask for tonight. I would like a map of Discovery Bay that includes all the streets, not just the main cross streets that are on that map. That's great if you're having furniture delivered. But if you really want to find somebody's house, you don't have a map. The nearest thing that's recently came out in a little phone book. However, it left Ravenswood out, and as it would be, that was what I was trying to find, Blake Court. Is there such a thing as a complete Discovery Bay map? Okay. And how old is this city? And why don't we have one? Because everybody doesn't have a GPS, so would this be something that the board could look into?
The county is responsible for producing maps of the area, and I believe that they should have something like that. The town has never actively itself, and at least, Virgil, correct me if I'm wrong, has never actively published a map. We've always plagiarized somebody else's map.
The one behind you is great for cross streets. It does not have all the residents.
It's not an item that's in our budget that we would have the funds to do at this point. I would really look to the county, Pat, and if you check with the county and see if they do have one, we'd love to know if in fact you were successful.
What you're saying is there isn't an existing one that you know of.
Hold on a second. Brian?
I have one, and I got it from the Elections Department of Contra Costa County.
That solves the problem. Maybe. I'll get back to you on
that. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Hearing none. We'll now move to area agencies reports. I would invite Lieutenant Burton to come forward and talk to us about our police activities.
Good evening.
Hey, Mike.
Watch out for the fan.
Fan. Ring.
Thank you.
Mike's kind of small, it's hard to see him.
Yeah.
you need a bigger pillar.
Yeah. The next batch. When is that going on?
Sir? Thank you, sir. Sorry.
I want for the
keep
official record.
Keep one and pass it along. Sorry.
Well, review that. I just wanted to give some information on some Marine Patrol activity. During the month, they conducted Operation Delta Blitz is what it was named. I'm not sure the names of things. But they had 60 personnel from 9 different agencies in our county. They contacted 306 vessel contacts, 160 vessels boarded. They issued 113 citations, arrested 3 people for boating under the influence. They had 8 terminations, which means that some safety equipment was missing and they had to go immediately to the nearest marina. Recovered recovered 3 stolen boats and 1 stolen trailer. So pretty good deal. That's something that our Marine Patrol folks do, obviously with the Coast Guard and different agencies, and then they share, you know, it's a reciprocating effect, and that they'll go and help those guys out in their counties at some point. So it's really an effective program. I know I had a lot of people make inquiries to me about why there were so many officers on the water in particular day.
That was just in one day, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What day was that?
Last weekend.
And what day are they going to do it again? It was like the 20-something?
23rd.
23rd?
21st,
okay.
The other thing that's of note is we have seen an increase in the number of residential burglaries. Yes. And unfortunately, I have seen that both here and in Bethel Island. We've taken some steps to address it. I had some conversations today with some increased enforcement, directed enforcement. We've had crime analysis do a workup of the times of occurrence and see if there's any common things. The challenge I have in Bethel Island is that a lot of those folks only go out to their places maybe once a month or once every 2 months. So time of occurrence is difficult to establish. Here, it's Monday through Friday, day shift kind of stuff. It's folks that are, more than half of the burglaries that we have seen are unlocked residences. This month we even had a burglar let himself in with the key that was sitting on the doorstep.
They forgot to put the mat over it? Or?
Yeah, exactly. You know, some of it boils down to what we've talked about really in my entire time here, which is the, you know, locking things up and putting, locking doors and things like that. That side door access is, you know, they knock on the door. Once they get behind your gate, they're pretty much in, because those side doors are the weakest door in a house. And then once they're in your garage, they've got nothing but time. So we're taking steps to address that. And that's really all I can tell you on that. We're working on it, and we'll continue to work on it.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any specific questions with me? Yes, Mr. Pifo.
Not a question, just once again a compliment. You know, being on this board for 14 years, I know I've seen high and low points with the sheriff's office. Just this last Saturday, I saw 4 patrol cars out here in the area. I know that there were years where I didn't see 4 patrol cars all year. Mike, I want to thank you and the department for really stepping up. And I can't imagine if I had to give you a grade, I don't think there's a grade high enough to give you. You've really done a good job for our community, and
thank
I really
you.
Want to thank you for that.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Anybody else on the board?
I would just comment that, you know, when I moved out here in 1994, I can't remember locking the back door of my house, and it was a hard habit to break. I still have a bad habit of leaving the keys in my front door, and that's just so I can find them when I leave, you know.
Your address again?
Yeah. So, but the point is that we have grown, and it really is about community awareness, and I think that everybody should be encouraged, and I'm probably preaching to the choir because you guys aren't going to be interested citizens if you weren't in this room, but the community needs to understand they need to look out for each other. You see something suspicious in a neighbor's house, you got to say something about it. You got to go ask a question, or you got to call the police if you feel threatened by it. We really need to develop a sense of community here in Discovery Bay, even more than it has been. And I think as we do that, we'll find that we can get a handle on these on this economy-driven break-ins that we're having. So I would just encourage the support of the community to help the police do their job, and keep your eyes open. Don't be afraid to say something.
And that's an excellent point. One of the things that is remarkable to me when I drive around out here is first that couple hours in the morning, there's lots of folks out. There's lots of folks walking, jogging, riding bikes, things like that. If you come out here about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and you drive around, it's a ghost town. And many of the streets you drive up and down are ghost towns, and people, and it's breaking habits. Leaving the car door open or the back of the car open when you're bringing in the groceries, things like that. If I were a thief, and we're going to resurrect that program, we're going to implement with Tony and the volunteers to come up with some flyers and say, if I were a thief, I would have, and then write in whatever that is to start trying to raise people's sense of awareness, but it's habits. It's, you know, I am super, I lock everything, you know, to the point where sometimes I lock them, you know, I was telling Mr. Richardson when I pull into to get my cleaning done, the cleaners is literally right there where that podium is. I lock my patrol car and I have a badge and a gun. It's the unlock foot locker mentality. If something's not nailed down, behind a lock, then it's suspect or, you know, subject to some person come along and take it. So,
I remember a couple years ago here, a couple of sheriff's deputies took the time out and they were actually telling people, close your garage door. Yes. We have, I kind of really weird hours. I'm in and out of here all the time. You can't believe at night when it's pitch black out how many houses I go by where not only is the door up and the lights out in the front half of the house, there's a Harley sitting 2 feet from the edge of the door and a car sitting next to it and a rollaway toolbox sitting next to that. And you think, you know, to come into your house and leave your door open and leave your car, your bike, and your stuff in the garage, you got to be an idiot in the first place. But I know the sheriff. You're asking somebody to come get it. And I do remember a few years ago the sheriff coming down the street and actually stopping and saying, you might want to close your garage door.
And you would be surprised at how many people are offended when that's done. I did that as a patrolman when I worked out here. 18 years ago, people would be offended that you woke them up at 3 in the morning to close their garage door. I expect the deputies, when they see those kinds of things, as they're in their travels, that even during the day, there's been times when I've stopped in front of a house to the point where I want someone to notice me and come out and say, hey, you might want to lower your garage door down. So it's just it's an unfortunate sign of the times. And this community was very protected and very, you know, had some elements of Mayberry to it that just aren't here anymore. So anybody else want
comments from the Lou? Did you have something?
Yes, sir. I think I could fairly well speak for the community. These reports that once in a while end up in the Discovery Bay Press are very valuable to members of the community. They see what's going on. I don't know how often these are generated. When I called the Discovery Bay Press about police reports being in the newspaper so people could see what action was going on, they said, we only get those occasionally, sort of thing. I'm just thinking in the same vein as you're talking about the flyers and that sort of thing. A weekly list cut for the Discovery Bay Press, maybe a little blurb. I'm sure they would be glad to put it in the newspaper. Remember to do this and this and this, and this is what's happened in Discovery Bay in the last week. That's one of the first things I look for in there. What's been happening in my community? And I know that we had all these burglaries, so, you know, I tighten things up, you know, leave the alarm on every time I left, and good things like that. I think that would be an important, helpful tool to help the sheriff's office do this every day.
Okay, thank you.
Point of housekeeping before we move forward, folks. We have this new digital recording system that allows us to put the meetings onto the website. The only caveat is you actually have to speak into a microphone. So please, when you're addressing the board and or somebody here that's giving a presentation, please get to the podium and make sure the microphone's on and speak into the microphone for us so we can get it recorded and acknowledged. Walter?
Thank you, President Graves. Lieutenant, thank you, and I also want to echo what a fabulous job you guys are doing. I just think it's getting better and better.
Thank you.
But, you know, on this thing with the, you know, preventative stuff, you know, I just want to echo, and if maybe a flyer can be done with instances, because I know I have a neighbor who just loves to leave his garage open to keep the heat out. And, you know, he keeps it open enough that even a big guy like my size could crawl underneath it. I've talked to him about it, and it doesn't work. But, you know, that's just opportunities, as you know.
Yes.
But if there was, like, flyers or something that you guys had of instances where that's where the thief got in, by that sort of stuff, that you could leave those sort of stuff in there, or it could be left on those sort of people's doorsteps, that, you know, somebody like myself, they're not listening to, that they could say, well, wow, here's an instance where that really happened, or five or six instances. So you had those sort of stuff that really could be hopefully maybe drive it home to these people, because that's what we want to stop. And if we can get that driven home to these people, I think we could really drive down a lot of it, because as you say, most of this stuff is preventable. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Director Peoples? Walter, I think that's a good idea, and I think, and Mike, maybe you guys did it too, but Marv Rudis used to do that. They would leave a flyer that said, if I was a criminal, you'd be a victim. They did run it. I remember him reporting how many people got mad that they were doing that. Yeah. But you know what? If they're getting mad, it's driving the message home.
And
I do think that's
right.
A good idea.
And some incidences.
That concern was brought to me, and my position is, if you're stupid and I tell you you're stupid and I offend you, then I'm sorry, but it is what it is.
Right.
And how many times have, you know, every month when I get up there, we've had, you know, the $800 coach purse off the front seat of the Cadillac Escalade at the tanning salon because somebody didn't want to bring their purse in to tan.
It's the darling.
Left the window down because it's hot. It's all those sorts of things where, unfortunately, people for 20 years, they haven't had to worry about rolling up their windows. I won't tell on who it is, but one of the director's cars sitting in the parking lot right now with its window down far enough that I could certainly get it. And there's an iPod cord coming from the radio that I don't know if there's an iPod on the other end of it, but certainly find out.
I'll be right back.
I know there isn't.
Put that sucker on my lunch.
That's
another bad habit. The keys are in the car, so I know where they are.
You have to laugh or else you cry, because it really is a sad. Yeah. It's a sad thing that we're experiencing, but it's something the criminals have adapted, and the good people need to adapt as well.
We've got them on video surveillance if somebody does get into them or dump weeds in our front yard or do any of those unmentionables.
Yeah, well, all that stuff is good. And one of the things we have seen a lot of too is folks that have security alarms, but they were just running to Ace. They're just running to grocery store, things like that. Yep. So it's all those things. Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, you get an F all the way across the board.
The first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem.
That's right.
We can start step two.
Right. Is anybody else having anything for me? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate it. We don't have a CHP report. I don't know why we keep putting that on there, because we never have a CHP report.
I've got a call.
But I would like to invite those that like to be here, like Battalion Chief Burris, to come forward and entertain us for a while.
So, copy of the fancy papers for the president.
Oh,
I know which side my brother's is buttered on.
Oh, yeah.
I'm one of Tom, sorry.
The GM stole it, but that's okay. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Battalion Chief Burris with East Coast Coastal Fire Protection District. I'm your Senior Battalion Chief and your EMS and Safety Chief. Standard speech that I'm going to give to the board is that your fire department is a umbrella of protection, where no one fire station is a standalone entity, that if you have a fire, you will receive fire engines from as far away as Oakley. And conversely, if Brentwood has a large fire, your fire engine could possibly leave your station. So it's really important that you dial 911 and you just don't drive down to your local fire station. With that being said, I've given you a summary of the calls that we ran August 1st and August 31st. There were 2 structure fires, 2 vehicle fires, 9 vegetation fires, 1 exterior fire / dumpster fire. If you burn something in your fireplace and you put the hot coals in your plastic garbage can, you will burn the garbage can down. And if the fire gets hot enough in that garbage can next to your house, you will heat up the nails that hold the siding onto your house. You will then catch your house on fire. My engine companies, being thorough and efficient, will show up. If your stucco is discolored, we will remove the stucco and possibly the interior sheetrock to guarantee the fire is out, because we do not want to come back at 3 in the morning because your house is now on fire and filling with smoke and we have to rescue you. 4 fire alarms, 7 auto accidents, 40 EMS call, 1 hazardous condition, one lockout and one cold fire. Does anyone on the board have any questions, comments? Director Pipo?
Just a quick one. On the station that, sorry, it's a sore subject, I'm not going where you think I'm going. The station that's closed, do you guys have a phone out in front? In other words, what caught my ear is when you said, don't go to your fire station. I think that's smart. But my question is for the audience, is that on the stations that are closed here and in Byron, is there a phone out front so that if somebody did make that accidental mistake and drove to a department, that they'd be able to make a 911 call from them?
I know the Discovery Bay on Discovery Bay Boulevard does have a phone, and I'm almost positive that the Byron station, all of our stations should have that, where it's just the push button and it sends you right to the fire dispatcher.
Right. Would you check on that for us on the other station? That would just be a good to know thing. I know sometimes when people are involved in, we had one happen last year at the Motor Lions motorcycle crash. We had somebody crash. We actually took them to a fire station because it was faster to do that. But it would be good to know if the station is closed, if somebody drove there, which is what they did in this case, if there was a phone available. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from the board? Comments, questions from the public.
Sir,
where is our closest EMS?
Standing about 4 feet away from
right.
Not
I'm closer.
Here right now. I mean, what station is it run on?
So where's your closest EMS provider or EMT or paramedic?
Yes.
When I call 911, I'm having a heart attack.
Station 59 or Engine 59, which is on Bixler, will arrive to your residence. You will also get a QRV, which is stationed at Station 59 on Bixler. The QRV has a first responder paramedic on it, whereas your fire engine has three EMTs on it.
Anybody else?
What kind of response time?
Lou, your bad habit.
What kind of response time will we have?
Depends if the engine company's in the station. Is it daytime, nighttime?
Where you live?
Well, give us an example of the day and the night, please.
All of our engine companies in the daytime will get out once they receive a 911 call with under a minute. During the nighttime, when they're normally asleep, they have 2 minutes to get out of the station. The response time is all going to depend on where you live. I don't have an exact response time, say, to the farthest point, which would be the end of Discovery Bay Boulevard. I would have to punch that in. But if you drive it pretty much, you know, at the speed limit and stop for stop signs, we'll be a little quicker than that.
Other questions?
Sorry if I don't have an exact answer for you. I
understand. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your information. You got anything else for us?
Let me off easy this time? Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming out. The ECCFPD did not meet since our last meeting. I spoke to... commissioner? Is he director? Commissioner Finetti, and he didn't have anything to report, asked me to convey. Do you have something on that?
One last thing, we do have a new fire chief. Chief Henderson was sworn in as the fire chief, and his swearing-in ceremony was on Monday.
Thank you. For you that don't know, he was an intern prior to this, so now he's officially the fire chief. Director Finetti indicated that there wasn't a meeting and there was nothing to report. He wasn't able to be here tonight, but he will have a report for us next week.
Two weeks.
He might have one next week, but we won't be able to hear it. Supervisor Peoples' office, Karen.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Good evening.
Hi there.
So I realized once I did this that all of mine have to do with our Public Works Department, because I'm sure you've noticed they're out and about in your community and else the greater community. Vasco Road, the safety improvement project is continuing. If you're on our mailing list, email blast, we try to send out to you every time we know that there's going to be a one-lane road closure. Expect 30-minute delays. So for this week, It started today, September 1st, and it will hopefully end Friday the 3rd. Expect about 30-minute delays from 8:30 to 3 p.m., and that is in the Brushy Creek area where they're doing all the work. And also be aware that the CHP is out there enforcing the traffic construction zone. And if you have any questions, you can call the Public Works Department for that. We also have a blog spot that you can keep active on that. The Cape Sill project, I'm sure you really noticed that in your community. That is again underway. And the Public Works Department and the contractor have been working to address all concerns. So please contact our office or the Public Works Department directly if you do have a concern related to the Cape Sill project. They should be starting the slurry seal portion of that on September 7th, which is next Tuesday, and that is a more long and drawn out process. The slurry seal, from what I know, needs to dry.
Cure.
For 4 hours. So be patient. Your roads will look really nice. Our office does have information if you or anyone you know has had any damage from the Cape Seal project. We have that information, and I believe the CSD has that information as well, the contact information. And lastly, the Country Club has put in their information to enact the California Vehicle Code within their gates as well. So that is being vetted through the county process. So that should be coming forward shortly. And that's it.
Thanks, Karen. Comments?
Karen, can you check?
Mike?
I've actually had a couple of people call me, and we have an issue also. Since they put the rock portion of it in, we have what looks like tar all over the sidewalks. We have rocks all over the sidewalks, and you can't clean it, you can't brush it off.
Okay. I know that's a problem they were addressing elsewhere, so if you want to email me the exact location or tell me right now, I can turn that into
that. It's on our street on South Point, and I'll find out who the other people's streets are on.
Perfect.
There's quite a bit everywhere.
Karen, I would suggest you get a hold of. It would be helpful to us if you just put out something out to Kevin or Kevin Amons or something over there, and just say, hey, you guys need to send somebody out to do an evaluation, do a survey. And find out where it's done, rather than wait to get called. It's going to be cheaper for them to fix this problem all at one time.
Okay.
So they probably need to survey it on their own and make that determination.
And it would be the contractor. It's not actually Public Works. But we'll turn it into that.
Direction to the contractor, however it's going to be. Thank you. I will add one thing. I did speak to the project manager, Kevin Amons,
from
Public Works, that's doing the project about it. And I will tell you that 4 hours is optimistic in our heat for the curing of that slurry seal. On streets, he went over the schedule with me on streets where I discovered a boulevard or Marina Road where it's only one way in or out. They're going to do it as if it's a four-lane road. They'll do the outside in the morning and let it cure, and then they'll do the inside or vice versa, however it works. So you'll still have access. But you may not have access. Excuse me. Miss me.
Bless you.
You screwed it up.
Look up. There you go. Get it out.
You may not have access to your driveways. I can guarantee you. I should say, for those that live on streets with individual driveways, they will not be making accommodations for you to get in your driveway. You're going to have to park on Willow Lake and walk to your house or something like that, or plan not to be there for that day. The schedule will be posted. If you live on a street like in Marina at the Harbor Bay Association, they may sand the area that's processed because they're affecting 40 or 50 homes at a time, and you can't park on Marina because that's the area they're doing. So they may put some sand immediately afterwards, which helps without from the tracking and the damage to the vehicles. But be aware it's happening. Be aware that there's a responsibility that we have also as individuals to not make the job as easy as we can for them, so they can get in and get out. But 4 hours is optimistic unless it's a really cold day.
Just be patient.
Walter.
Thank you, President Gray. If you could just contact the project manager on this. I don't know about any other roads, but the road that I live on, River Lake, the contractors, semis, were really tearing through there at very high speeds. And I know a couple neighbors went out and were yelling out the truck drivers. It was quite obnoxious.
I will let them know.
Thank you.
Thanks. Chris?
I just want to echo the same thing. Truck was doing 35 miles an hour, broke my windshield on my truck, and I'm not happy about the way they're coming down River Lake Road by Discovery Bay Elementary School. And there's a big safety hazard. The trucker was very rude to me. I pulled him over. I waited till to where he stopped, and he basically go talk to my foreman. Went and talked to the foreman. The guy was he was okay with me. Gave me a business card. Said call some lady back in the Bay Area. But anyway, the speeds were fast. I just rough estimate 35 miles an hour with this big rig going down Little River Lake Road. So slow it down.
Thank you. Did you have something, Luke?
Yes, I would like to know how difficult it is for an officer in the Harbor Bay Homeowners Association, how difficult it is for us to do what the Country Club has done, and I understand one other division and section of homes in here, to get the sheriffs to patrol our streets. How difficult is that?
It's not a difficult process. If you want to contact our office, I can tell you what we need.
We'll contact you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, because they're not gated. You should be able to control them.
Oh, if it's not a gated community, then it's it's not a private road. Oh, it is. Okay.
It's a private road.
So this only applies to private roads.
Yeah. The sheriff has told us he has to be invited in.
Yes.
We'd like him to come in without an invitation.
So then you would need to enact a week.
Can that be done through Tony Fano down here? The, or does it have to go through
the
office?
It has to go before the Board of Supervisors. So it, yeah.
General Manager.
With respect to Willow Lake, Gatorland School, and Discovery Bay Boulevard, I've been in a conversation with Kevin
Emons
of the county, and they are more than likely going to be doing the work for the slurry project on the Saturday out here in front of the school, again on Discovery Bay Boulevard, so we don't have the conflicts with the school, the big rigs, the slurry, dropping kids off at school, coming, you know, the commute hours. So I think they're trying to work with us as much as they can. So I'm very hopeful that that will work out much, much better.
And thanks for adding that, because they really are trying to work with your community. We know it's an inconvenience, but it will be for the betterment. And they have worked with the elementary school and the preschool next door. Well, I've interviewed.
Thank you. I noticed it too. To echo everyone's complaints, the gravel, the tar, the rocks were up and down the street. But I will say this for the contractor, or for the county anyway, is that within a couple of hours of us making a complaint, it was all cleaned up. Now, the sidewalks haven't been, and the tar is still a problem, but they really did a messy job the first night they were out here. We had rocks not only up and down the boulevard going through windshields, but out on Highway 4, and I followed a truck out there. It spilled rocks all over Highway 4, and they end up in our windshield. So I'm glad they're being responsible, but they need to be a little more proactive right off the bat. And I know you guys have been carrying that message forward, so thank you.
Any other questions for Karen? Thank you for being here, Karen. Okay, item D is the consent calendar. I would like to remove item D5 and place it in as item F3, please.
Thank you.
I would make a motion then to approve the consent calendar with the... go ahead before I make that. Yeah.
Item 6, because it's for adopted resolution, would it actually under action item instead of consent calendar?
Board President. You actually have to either hold it or click it on the bottom.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. You may do this under the consent agenda, or you can move it to the action item, either one.
Do you want discussion on that, Ray?
I just want to clarify.
Procedurally? Okay,
please,
sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
I would go ahead and make a motion that we approve the consent calendar with the change of moving item D. Was it D5?
D5.
To F5? You
F3.
F3. To F3.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any other discussion by the board? Any discussion from the public? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Item E. At this point, I will turn on my mic. At this point, I will open the meeting to a public hearing and take testimony on the Conflict of Interest Code Amendment. Staff?
Thank you, President Graves. This is an item that's ministerial in action, necessity that every 2 years the CSE is required to adopt and update the conflict of interest code. And sometimes it's not necessary to make any changes. And if that's the case, we just go ahead and do so if there were any changes in this situation. There are a number of changes due to the fact of the change in general manager, the addition of water and wastewater manager, the addition of the landscape manager, the change in our legal counsel, and is also we have the consultants that come in and are also subject to the conflict of interest code that are required by the state. So this is generally, like I said, a ministerial action. We are all required to follow the conflict of interest codes. As the employees and staff consultants that are listed here are required to comply with state law as relates to that. And so that this action just ratifies that.
Any discussion by the board? Any public comments? Hearing none, I close the public hearing.
Like to make a motion, sir?
Yes.
Yeah, that we adopt resolution 2010-12.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Off to new business, F1. Town Discovery Bay fiscal year operating and capital budget summary. Mr. Howard, you're on.
Thank you. This is an opportunity for staff to present to the board, as well as the community, a review of our 2009-10 operating capital budget as it related to fiscal year that ended on June 30th, 2010. As is indicated in the agenda report, we had the adopted budget had expenditures of $5.15 million. I had a budget of $5.15 million. We exceeded that budget by approximately $131,000 and $5.236 million, or approximately 2.5% over the adopted budget. Specifically, the operating budget was $2.9 million, budget with actual expenditures of $3.7 million, and the capital budget was almost $2.2 million. With actual expenditures of $1.5 million. When you have a budget, it's important to recognize that your budget is your planning document for your organization, and it's a fluid document that's going to change throughout the course of the year. Your operating budget is a one-time fixture. It begins and ends at the beginning and end of this year, while your capital budget will be adopted and change annually, but it's going to remain fluid, and you're going to have projects that will be added to it. And it will come off of it. For example, we purchased a new vehicle this current fiscal year that was just delivered today, from what I understand. And so that will carry over next year. But if we had a much larger multi-year capital project on here, it would continue year to year. So I just want to make that distinction. Every budget will inherently never come in exactly to the penny. There will always be a final budget amendment at the end of the fiscal year that will adjust the budget to make it balance the budget out. And so it's important that we know that there are variances in a budget. And during the course of the year, there are always some line items are going to be higher than others, some are going to be lower, you're going to come on target, some you're going to miss, some you're going to hit, and some you're going to come up, you're going to come under. It's the nature of budget. It's a document that the board gives us, and we as staff, we follow that document. It's also important during the course of the year that if a project comes up and there is an expense that exceeds the budget or is something that is unanticipated, that during the course of the year I want to make sure that we have a budget amendment that will adjust the budget for that additional expenditure, or on the converse side, if we have something that needs to be eliminated because it just isn't going to happen, we can reduce the budget by that corresponding amount. This past fiscal year, I gave you three examples of items that things happened during the course of the year. The budget, we had three items. One, with Veolia Water, for example, there were actually 13 payments that were made during the past during the past fiscal year, because there were only 11 payments made in the prior fiscal year. So we got, it was a catch-up item. So that was an $82,000 hit to the budget. We had a couple of other items that totaled approximately.
Let me interrupt. So technically that wasn't an over, oops, it was already on. It wasn't technically an over-budgeted item. It was just, it just carried over the next year. It was budgeted in both years, and it took 2 years for it to equal out.
Correct. And, okay. And that item needed to be accrued properly, but the county and,
yeah,
and our budgetary processes are a little bit different.
Right.
They close out their cycles at a different time period than we do. Their fiscal year is the same, but the way they do their year close out kind of messes things up for us a little bit. We can't always meet their timing. So that happened. There were other two items, we talked about $60,000 that were in there. Now, were again, one was a duplicate, not a duplicate payment, but was an additional payment. If you remember the Salinity Study membership, the amount of, I believe, $10,000. We paid 2 years in 1 year instead of paying 1 year last year or 2 years ago, and then this last fiscal year. And then again, another approximately $50,000 worth of workers' comp insurance that was paid again out of prior year, two payments made in 1 year. It's all consistent. It just need, because of the way the county does their balancing of their books, it throws us into a little bit of a tight constraint of trying to get everything done. It's important for me to make sure that we close out our books in a period of time that's reasonable, where we can receive invoices from a vendor like Veolia, for example, and that those invoices that come in for the month of June, we pay in July, that they get paid in a timely manner, where the county, sometimes their calendar is much shorter and their dates sometimes limit to when those payments can be accrued, because maybe Veolia didn't get, I'm not saying this is the case, it's possible that a vendor got their payment to us maybe in August, for example, for June, and that sometimes happens. We can't always guarantee when a vendor, an outside vendor or contract of ours, has submitted an invoice to us. So overall, I think we did pretty well last year. $131,000 over budget on a budget that was a little over $5 million. Certainly you would like to come under budget. That's always the desire. But in this situation with those three items I just gave you, those were $142,000. We were over by $131,000. Had those been accrued for the active years, we would have been approximately $10,000-$15,000 under budget. Now, this board took some proactive steps for the current year budget to address some of those issues with respect to some of the maintenance items as it relates to some of those things that happen in the street, water leaks, which require massive investment to go in and do a major repair. The board took some proactive steps in this current year, so that I think this year's budget is much better than last year's in terms of the funding or the expenditure side. And I also think that when we do have items that come before us, and we do have a line item, we have a contract that comes before us, and there's a large expenditure, I will bring a budget amendment to the board concurrently with the contract or whatever that expenditure is. So this is really just for your information. Happy to answer any questions you might have. Liz is here, answer any questions you might have, and be happy to go from there.
Thanks, Dad. Mark? David.
Yeah, Rick, thank you for that great explanation. I appreciate that. In fact, I enjoyed reading the agenda report. I wanted to thank you later about the way you're putting these agenda reports in, so we can kind of disseminate some of the information as it comes through. I had just three comments without going through line item, because I don't think this is the place to do it tonight. One is when you prepare the budget or when we finalize these budgets, it would be great to have an addendum added to it. I don't know if you ever, we've done this in the past, but it's something for the board to consider in the future. Basically, as you've done in your executive summary here, a little bit of an explanation. I know sometimes people whether they'll do a public records request or whether they ask to see the budget, they may not be able to interpret it in the sense that, as you've explained, that perhaps we've received bills where we've received 13 in a 12-month cycle or something, that there's an explanation or a reason that it's a little out of whack. I did see on here actual expenditures, basically 2.5% over the adopted budget. I think that's getting really close to being on target. It's nice when they're under, but sometimes they are over. Second comment of the three is I would also like to see, or I would like the board to consider, because a budget is a tool, and the better the tool is, the better you're able to use it, we have, and it's pretty common the way we're doing it, but we have percentage of year-to-date. We have the actuals, year-to-date reimbursements. We have those columns. It might be helpful, and I think you'll understand this right off the bat, of having actual overrun costs. In other words, what we've got in the final budget column line is percentages. And, you know, there's 600, there's 146, they're all over the map. The issue is people, including myself, tend to focus on those percentages. But the percentages are all based on a different number. In other words, each line item has its own number. So you may have a 500% override on a $5 item, and it's really, monetarily, that's not very much. Whereas if you have a, I'll give you two examples, line item 7680 and 7690. They're both in the same vicinity of an overrun, 146%. One's 141, one's 146. Yet one basically tells us we've run over budget by $456. The other one, we're over $7,000 over budget. So having a third line on there to consider of actual costs would be helpful to the board, I believe.
You know, I think we actually have that. It's in, this is a much larger, longer spreadsheet, and I condensed it down so that. I refer to that as a variance column.
Right.
And if it's not if it's not on that spreadsheet, it's certainly something Liz and I can put in place.
It's just a suggestion to take a look at. And the last one, and this one's pretty minor because hopefully it wouldn't hop up here a lot, but some type of asterisk or some type of way of highlighting, and maybe we, I know we've talked about it in the past and go over doing it in red, but wherever you have what would be considered an unusual circumstance, and I think you just mentioned some of them in your report, where certain things were done, whether it's out of order or the county's picking something up at a different time, where it's where there's a real need to point out why that part of the budget is so out of whack. Just three thoughts. Thank you.
Any other comments from the board? Comments from the public?
Mr. McVitie.
Thank you, President Graves. General Manager Howard, thank you. I appreciate putting this together. And while, you know, I agree that the overall, when you look at it from an overall standpoint, 2.5 sounds good. But getting in deep on it, you look at what makes it look like that 2.5 is because a lot of the capital projects weren't really done. So if you look at it from the perspective of looking at it from the operational side, that, and you look at from there, I think it, looking at your things, it's like 27% over budget from that aspect. So if you could maybe go into a little bit more specifics and help us maybe understand maybe that area, that's, I guess, and help us understand maybe some of that area, that could be helpful to the audience. Thank you.
Let me just make a comment. Yeah, thank you, Walter. Appreciate that. Now, let me just make a comment on that. The fact is that you could actually just take item by item here and say, okay, this item was over budget, this item was under budget. The budget is the budget. The budget is both operations and capital. And on operations and capital, we were 2.5% over budget. Now, if we don't have the money to spend, sometimes the board... I wasn't on this board for the whole year. I'm just making general statements. Sometimes the board will choose not to do a capital project because, in fact, they know they're over on an operations budget, and that's being fiscally responsible. That may have been what happened here throughout the year with this board. I can't say for sure because I wasn't here for the whole year. But I really think that when you again, I appreciate the question. And let me first bring it down to real numbers, and that is that I know what you're looking at here and saying 27%, but in reality, because of numbers that have come in since then. I was in here for a couple hours working with the accounting department. It's down to 20% now, and I'm not trying to split hairs yet, but that's a third. And that's down because, again, we have reimbursables coming from other departments that it takes the county a while to process, and it's not an excuse when Rick talks about, and I'm sure Virgil experienced some of this also, when you talk about the county's county member, they're our treasurer, in essence. They're the ones that actually write our checks for us. And their accounting system runs a little different than our accounting system, and therefore, it doesn't happen immediately. We still have reimbursements out that we just got some this week, and we live some $80,000 came in reimbursement. So that bottom line has changed since it was printed. So it's down to about 20% now of operations budget.
Thank you, but this is all we see, so I appreciate your explanation, if that's what it is.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly, Walter. And I just wanted to, and when I saw this come on here, I thought I better come in and check this out and get the numbers right. Again, not making excuses, but also I've got about $600,000 worth of items that ran over budget that are explainable through either you got to do it because when you turn on the water, general repairs on our water system, there wasn't enough allotted in that in the budget to allow Veolia and our own crews to do repairs as needed. Got to have water when you turn on the tap. It's helpful if the toilet flushes when you pull the handle. So some of these things you can't anticipate, and all I can say is going forward, we have increased that budget by some $300,000 or $400,000 over last year to make sure that we don't have this budget shortfall in the operations. And the goal as a group gets together and sits up here and tries to put a budget together is to be more exact every year. And I think that's what this board did this year. Unfortunately, it also has meant that we need to generate more revenue to get it balanced. But the fact is we're trying to get there, and I appreciate that. I don't know if that addresses all your issues, Walter, but that's kind of my piece on that. Did you have something to add to that, Brad?
Well, I would only add that referring to general repairs as an example, those are, Virgil, correct me if I'm wrong, those are when you have a water main break in the street and it's unanticipated. Well, we budgeted what we thought was a reasonable number, $300,000 last fiscal year.
Right.
The actual number came in at $553,000 more. And those are, you can't ignore, those are things you have to deal with. As an example, that budget was increased to $500,000 for this current fiscal year. So there was an overt positive step in that direction. Just for the public's knowledge and for the board, there were two other quick line items. One was office buildings. If you're looking at the document line item 7665, it had a $5,000 budget. Well, we spent almost $22,000, and that was a lot of that money went to the security system because this building was broken into and a lot of our equipment was stolen. And another reason was for this audio system that we're now utilizing and we're still tweaking. So those are items that were unbudgeted, but yet the board felt was important to include. The last item I just wanted to reference was there was a line item with respect to office equipment. It was, again, a $5,000 line item, and we spent $30,000. That was for a big portion of that was to get the water meter billing system up and running. And so these are things that kind of come along during the course of the year and that are not, some of them are, most are unanticipated, but these are also good examples where I would bring back to the board a budget amendment to recognize those changes and to revise the budget as necessary. And that's pretty standard operating procedure.
Thanks, Rick. Did you have something, Ray? Yes? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I said
I gave your mic.
Oh, okay. And as long as we're pointing out individual items, it's my understanding also that we somehow got billed early on our liability insurance. We already paid the $60,000 for this year's liability insurance in last year's budget.
That was the $50,000 I was referring to.
Oh, okay. So
a
portion of it is accounting, and a portion of it is the fact that we had to spend more than we intended to spend. It's not quite as bad as it looks, but again, by making fiscally sound decisions with regards to how you're going to spend the money, and it's more important to spend it on, for an example, and we didn't do it, but on a repair in the street than it is on a new truck, that's the decision the board has to make when it gets before it. So, any other questions from the public? Great, Rick. Thank you very much for that report. I appreciate it. F2, I think we're at now. Is that correct? F2. Mr. Howard. Oh, excuse me. You know what? I'm a resident there, so I'm going to get out of the room. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Is it still there?
Is it still
there? Vice President Simon.
Oh.
Pro Tem?
Excuse me.
I might want to wake up from that nap.
We're going to have a review of the residential water charges in Harbor Bay. That will be presented by our general manager, Mr. Howard.
Thank you, Vice President Simon. If you recall, back on July 7th, Mr. Lou Erickson of the Harbor Bay Homeowners Association came to the board and expressed brought to the board's attention the fact that they believed that they were being miscalculated, that their water rates were being miscalculated. The board directed myself and Water Wastewater Manager Virgil Caney to meet with Mr. Erickson, which we did, and we have come to a compromise resolution. I don't think it's anything that everybody wanted, but I think it's one that is workable for the time being. But the problem rests in the fact that part of their parcel is metered, part of their landscaping is metered, their residential units are not metered, and until such time as the entire project, residential and landscaping, are all metered, it's very difficult to properly assess what's fair and what's not fair, because you're billing certain things metered and the same exact thing isn't being metered. And so I felt that it was prudent for us to suspend the water meter billing at this point in time until we receive, or until the entire project is on water meters. State law says 2025. There was some question as to 2015. Just so everybody knows, the 2015 year, that is a benchmark year, but it's only for those water districts that are pulling water out of the San Joaquin Federal Waterway Program. So since we pull from wells, it doesn't apply to us. We're still on a 2025 program, unless, of course, the law changes at some later date.
Rick, can I interrupt you?
Certainly.
Okay, we are also able to install meters at any time. And in this case, if this became an issue, we don't have to wait for any circuit. We can put them in tomorrow.
That's correct.
So if that will alleviate this problem, and that's what it's going to take to resolve it, we have to do it.
That's correct.
That's what they're doing.
Yes. I was talking to Lou about this yesterday, and I had indicated to him, it's unfortunate, in a certain extent, that they're at the front end of the community, and, you know, the low-lying fruit are always the easiest ones to pick, versus the back end of Discovery Bay Boulevard. That's going to be, probably the end of the road, depending on which way you start the process. So not knowing what type of a map or planning the board's going to want us to implement at some point in time in the future, we can most definitely begin installing water meters at any point in time, at any time the board directs us. If the association came to us and said, we want water meters installed, we'd be thrilled to install them.
So my point is that you could do just Harbor Bay. I mean, if the issue is that they want to be on meters, you could meter just Harbor Bay.
That's correct.
Without doing anything else until the time.
That's correct. If we were to do that, the estimated cost per homeowner is approximately $250 to $400, and we do have a program set up so that we pay it over a 12-month period, and the board can even make adjustments to that as it goes, but the theory is that they would be done over a period of time, and they would have a period of time to be reimbursed.
Before I turn over the rest of the board, one of the issues I had before you went into all of this is I don't ever want to be in a position where the board is held hostage. And it was just brought to my attention that there's bills not being paid, that meters were never paid for, the meter that was put in was never paid for.
The bills were not paid, but they have since been paid. As a matter of fact, got that here. One of my stacks. Thank you, Liz, for preparing this for me this afternoon. They paid on... I don't know the date, I'm sorry. Actually, I do have a copy of the check.
That's okay, but it is
paid. Yeah, July 27th. They paid just over $3,800, which covered... Their entire bill was $3,958. They somehow missed about $130 worth of billing, but we didn't worry about that because we will catch up to them later on that, but we weren't going to worry about that point in time because they made a good faith effort to pay the water bill along with their installation and cost of the meter. So that is all paid up.
I just think that we should be in a position, is it going forward? We should be starting from this point. Whatever we do tonight should be starting from a fresh point as right now. I know you had a comment.
Yeah, actually I do on the overall.
Great, do you want to go first?
I want to get my hands around this because I'm fairly familiar with homeowners associations. I live in one myself, and obviously the board's going to be able to deliberate not only what to do here on a focus project, but you've got 13 other homeowners associations out there. They're probably suffering the same problem that some may not even realize it. I'm not sure. I just put that out on the table. We're kind of at an odd place in our existence as far as billing and meters and everything goes. I think most of the audience knows, and I know the board knows, we've got half of Discovery Bay's on meters because they were mandated when they built their homes, and the other half isn't. And as long as that exists, we're going to have some inequity. And whether or not the community tolerates that or the board remains to be seen. But it does put different philosophies under different roofs depending on where you live. As far as this project or what's in front of us tonight, just so that I understand it, and then maybe people that don't might, but it looks like they are getting double billed to me. Because we're currently on, and I'm going to speak specifically about places that don't have meters, we're on a tiered system. And I know that if I look at my home, for instance, which is not on a meter, I pay based on my parcel size. I don't get two separate bills. I don't get a bill for my structure and what I use inside the house and a bill for my landscaping. It's all put into one. However, when you start looking at a homeowners association who has common property and they all kick into that fund to pay for that, and if we're sending or getting a bill for the landscaping portion and then charging them the tier for their units, they quite possibly are getting double billed. So I am in favor of suspending this, which is on our agenda tonight, until we can really figure out the proper way to handle that so that it's equitable for both sides, for the district and for the association and the individual homeowners that make up the association. It does get difficult. Under our current billing structure, it really complicates things. I think once we go to all meters, then it's real simple. You pay for what you use inside your home, and the association as a unit pays for what they use in the landscaping. The only thing, and Mark, you actually brought it up and made me think about it, I think it would be smart for this board, and I offer this as a suggestion, maybe not to be taken tonight, but it's a direction for us to think about, is identifying the, again, I believe it's 13 homeowners associations, not the property owners association, they don't own common property, but the minute we do this for one, the rest are going to be asking for it. I know I'll be asking for it in my association. I have no doubt that we're getting two separate bills. I think we should look at the associations, and although we've stalled out the water meter program, it might be a good intermediate step for us to take care of these, what do they call them, common unit developments?
BUDs.
Yeah, that we take care of these because they really are in an awkward place where they have their landscaping. You know, when I bought a condo, they said you own the paint inside the wall and inside. They're in a very unusual, they're very different than single family dwellings, and I would like to see us really take care of all of them, get it taken care of. Then we can stall the program out or whatever the board sees, but it would be fair and equitable to take care of all of them. Thank you.
Sure. One of the differences here in the homeowners associations, and some of them, they have homes that have backyards, side yards, and front yards. So they are actually using that water along with the common groundwater. So I don't have an issue with them paying twice because they're actually using it both times. In this case, they have no backyards, they have no side yards, they have no front yards. So I also believe, Virgil, if I'm correct, are they the only homeowners that has a large water use meter? Have we metered all the other condos also?
Most of them haven't, but some of them are very similar to that. There's two other associations very similar to them. I'm not sure about Sunday Isle. I don't know who it are. The water, when water's a landscape, if it came from a meter, their meter, if you put a meter at the individual condos, or it would be from the larger landscape. But there are two other ones that fit in the same Billy Ray as Harbor Bay Island.
I think Sand Bay Isle falls into the same criteria as Harbor Bay.
Like, I think what we do for one, I mean, you're going to have to be fair here. What we do for one, if they fall into the same circumstance, what you do for one, you do for all three. Before we go any further, I know Ray, you have any comments next to that.
I do. First, I have a question. Does that mean they're current on all bills that we build them? All bills. Are they current on all bills?
They are not current on $130.70. I think that was an oversight on their part when they paid the $3,800 bill. They should have paid $39.58. Okay. And I believe that the new bills are currently, the new readings are currently in this, and they have not been billed yet, but they have recently been read, so they have not been billed subsequently. So this set of billing.
Okay. My point is that I believe what we should do is put them on the water meters immediately, start that process. That will get the inequity, if there is one, out of the way and settled. However, I think it's a bad precedent, and I would not vote to suspend the bills. They should pay the bills that they're supposed to pay until we put them on water meters. But it sets a fast precedent, and we could end up being barraged by a bunch of other places. And, you know, that's fiscally irresponsible to the district. That's my comment.
I have to echo what Director Tetro said. Is I don't pay my phone bill in 2 months, it's shut off. I don't pay my power in 2 months, it's shut off. And I really think that as a board, we have to become tougher about people not paying their bills. And going, how long did they go without paying?
It was approximately a year. It was 9-10 months to a year. In their defense, part of that was our own bookkeeping issue. So I don't want to throw all the blame to Harbor Bay on that.
That's fair.
We have some culpability as well. But certainly they were notified with sufficient advance notice. They didn't receive the notice. He did get a phone call from me saying that we would be turning the water on in 72 hours. And that's what brought this whole issue.
Okay. I have to agree with what both Director Tetro and Vice President Simon said. I think we should meter it. I think we should do that. I also want to echo what David said. I think maybe doing an internal audit to find out ahead of time before these associations come to us. If we can find out ahead of time if Sandy Bay Isle falls under the same thing or if there's any other common associations. But I do agree with what Ray said, and I think that it starts now. It doesn't start a year ago. I'd probably be more lenient had they paid their bill for a year. But I have to agree with both the directors on the side that this has to go from now, and I think we should put water meters on there.
Yeah, it's just a point of clarification. I do agree with my fellow directors completely. What I'm reading in the recommended action was to temporarily suspend the current water rate structure. I have no qualms about, they got to pay their bill. We just have to change the structure, and to me that means switching them over to water meters. So I completely agree.
And when that happens, we'll switch it. But
yes.
Until that time, they pay whatever the bill comes out.
We're all in complete agreement. Here. Thank you.
We need to be in it, and I think we're all in agreement here. The rule came down, the structure was put together, and everybody lived by that structure. And if somebody feels that it's unfair, that's what this hearing is for. That's what we're looking at it for. But you can't go back and change it and say, well, this is, everybody else had to pay it, but you guys don't. I agree with all my fellow directors. At this point, I believe we should put the meters in immediately. I believe it's going to be a 60. Are we looking at, Virgil, you think a 60-day process to put them in?
I believe so. I believe it's 122 minutes, I believe.
How many units?
So I believe it would be about a 60-day process.
Less than a quarter.
Pardon me?
Less than a quarter.
Less than a quarter. Yes. So we would be, we get him in.
We believe, you know, as I preached to you before, we are now in the harder section, meaning all of the rest of Discovery Bay, there are some homes do not have water meter boxes.
Right.
They
right.
kind of expect in the front of your yard. So you'll have to do some hunting and pecking. We'll have to be probing the ground to locate those units. Because you then physically have to shut the water off to that house temporarily while you put the meter on. We have to find those curb stops if there one exists. If it doesn't exist, we may have to shut down the street in order to go in there. We'll locate a pipe. We may have to just cut the pipe going on.
And again, the point I make is that it'd be done in a timely manner. So we don't drive into another quarter.
Right.
So the worst case scenario is they pay one more quarter and or part of a quarter. And
what's going to happen to you is when you put that meter on that parcel, whatever their rate that they paid for the 10, 11 year, that will be a credit.
Yeah, I guess that.
Right, right. Okay. Right.
Yeah, we understand that. Just like we do to everybody else.
I mean, I think that's fair and equitable.
Just a suggestion. I know you're going to go to the audience. Lou's here, who wrote us a letter. I'd like to hear from him and see if that's acceptable, what they think about it.
Let the board get that in. Lou, I know you had some things you wanted to say.
Yes.
Please come up. And...
all down here. First of all, we've been charged twice for our same water. That's not fair. It's just plain not fair to be charged twice. It was an error, possibly you want to call it an error, a mistake. Something happened, and we didn't catch it early enough at the legislative point. We caught it over a year ago. I started talking with Director Simon and that to get onto the board. I unfortunately got West Nile virus, so I went in a coma for a few months, delayed in my recovery to get back into this thing. I've been working all year with this. So we have been charged twice for our water. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's fair to anybody in the community to be singled out. Our complex, if you take our whole complex, including our streets and our every bit of land that we have there, and divided by the number of homes, we come up 3,570 square feet per unit. We're in the 5,000 foot threshold. So by that token right there, we're watering less than a 5,000 foot section by paying through our homeowners' taxes. Then and the reason why we sent a letter to the district saying we don't think this is fair, and we started that process. Now, if we made a faux pas of not paying the bill because we were active in saying that this isn't right, I went back to my board and I said, let's pay this thing, put it some sort of a fund or a different line item so that it doesn't look like we're the bad guys, we're not paying our bill, that sort of thing. Let's get that done. So we did that. I think that the rate that we're paying through our homes, considering we would be watering a piece of landscape that's 3,570 square feet, is fair and equitable rate for what we're charging. For you to charge us, even though we've been under this, and I think Director Simon can attest to this, that I've been talking to him all this time, I think it's a double charge and it should be a refund. By removing the surcharge, it puts us back into a parity with the rest of the township. Your house, all these other houses. I was not aware that any other complex out here and no other complexes brought it to the board. They missed it. Somehow they missed it. I was lucky. I found it. At such time that the entire township changes the metering, not that we're selected. We're out here. We're saying, whoa, this is unfair.
oh, this is low-hanging fruit. All right, we're going to sock them with meters. What about all the other people in Discovery Bay? Now, the board said, okay, we're going to start meters next year, 6 months from now, 60 days from now, we're going to start on a program, and we're going to go all around Discovery Bay and put in meters. Great. That everybody is treated equally and fairly. We did place that money in good faith with the district. We're willing to pay for the, you know, meter installation costs and let the meters just sit there. We're going to have them sooner or later, so take that out of that money. So in summary, I agree with Mr. Howard's recommendation to the addition of returning those water fees that we have already paid. I think it's unfair. I don't think that saying we're going to go ahead and charge you even though it's unfair, I've heard voices up here that said, I think that's unfair. I've talked to you individually. You've said it's unfair. And yet now I hear others speak here that says, well, you're going to have to pay it anyhow. And we're not, and you're just going to have to keep paying it now. I've even heard some words, we're going to have to keep paying it until you get meters in there. It's still not fair. You can't charge people for two bottles of water and when they're only using one. Yes, I'm willing to answer any questions.
A couple of comments and questions. The first one's a housekeeping one, Lou. You've given us all documents here that are signed by you as Vice President of the Harbor Bay Condominium Association. Is this an official document from the association? Is this something you typed up?
The association, our board of directors, authorized me to begin researching and negotiating.
Did they authorize this letter?
Yes.
They have authorized this letter.
And that not individually this particular thing. They gave me the authorization to go and negotiate with you. With the understanding, and I wouldn't take it on myself.
I'm sorry to cut you short. No, I just want to be clear. Is this letter from the association?
Is this the one I gave you this evening?
Yes. Is it from the association?
Yes. In my position as vice president of the association, Kevin can't speak to it because he's on.
I know it's actually a pretty simple question.
Right.
It's from the association. They've authorized this letter.
And with the caveat that any agreement that we got to, I would go back to them for their concurrence.
Okay.
I brought back to them.
I'm getting an answer, but it's not. I don't think I'm hearing the answer you're trying to tell me, but that's okay. As far as this being unfair, personal opinion, when we're doing tiered charging, it is, the whole thing's unfair. I have a 17,000 square foot lot, three people in my house. We are never home. We're gone all day long. I'm a fireman. I'm not even there. I get charged the biggest bill in Discovery Bay, or one of the biggest bills in Discovery Bay. It's unfair. Until we're all put on water meters, when I hear you say this is unfair, it's unfair to all of us.
Puts everybody at one time.
That's what we're trying to do, and I think that's what you're hearing from the board. That's what I heard from my fellow directors, is that the fairness is going to come to you quicker than it's going to come to me. That we're going to actually get right on getting those meters into your complex there. If I were you, in fact, if I were me, I'd be happy about that. I wish the board was doing it to my association that quickly. And the other thing I have to tell you, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way, just personally. We're not socking anybody. This board lives in Discovery Bay. We pay the bills. We feel the pain. Heck, we're trying to balance a budget, and it's balance on money coming in. This could be a revenue loser for us. So we're not trying to sock anybody, and maybe that was just a poor choice of words, but I see people trying to help you out.
I didn't have the word socking in there.
You did. Anyway, I don't want to argue with you about it. I think this is going in a good direction. I'd hate to see you talk your way out of it. So I would just look at the board and say, we're going in a good direction. Let's hope we can do that. Thank you.
The other thing is, the one thing you have to look at here, you don't get to pick the solution.
Right.
And that's, I think, what the problem is. If the water meter will solve your problem, then you can't say that will solve my problem, but you can't put mine in unless you put his in.
Right.
Because at this point, the concern, the only concern we have is your condominium association.
Right.
And you guys are the ones that are having that problem with the water bill. This will lower your bill back down below what you're paying now, and it'll end your problem. And we can't say we're just going to refund your money, not charge you anything, and
right.
be then. It's just not going to happen that way. And I think we've got to be fair here. If we put your meters in, your problem goes away. Your bill goes down. And I just don't see a problem here. I don't understand what the issue is at this point. So maybe you're going to you can inform me.
Well, number one, it'll be $400 to $600 out of our pockets immediately to put these, place these meters in tough financial times, for one thing. And I do think that when you try to put meters in the rest of Discover Day, there's going to be lots of discussion.
I'm sure there are,
yeah.
But I can't, again, and I don't want to beat this to death. The only way we can lower your bill back to where it's less than you're paying now, where your common ground is watered and there's not an issue, is to put your meters in. If we put your meters in, your problem goes away.
Yeah.
And you don't want to pay for it?
And Virgil, is it six? It's not 600 for the meters in.
I don't know. It's going to vary by individual residence. Like I said earlier,
right.
Some have water meter boxes. I have to make them a little larger to put the devices in. Some do not. And we will have to spend more time locating them and to worry a little bit more money on materials to dig an area out, put a water meter box, maybe what we call it, put a stop.
And we're going to, they don't pay this all at once. You're going to spread it over 12 months.
Unless you want to do another plan.
Sure.
12 months.
Yeah, that's, I thought that was
my question.
Virgil,
that's what I was
saying. I'm sorry, Mark. Virgil, do they have the opportunity of utilizing their own installer for your association?
They could hire a plumbing company and have
certified by us.
We'll supply them with the water meters and or the devices will come back. That's their call.
Let me correct one other thing in here. We said that, did you recommend that their money be refunded to them?
No, I think what Mr. Erickson was referring to is he says he agrees with the recommendation with the addition of his comment. Those were his words, not mine.
No, what I was going to say, Ray Cover, I just wanted to make sure that we could space it out over at least 12 months, so it's not all up front.
I mean, are we thinking that this cost is going to be less than $600 a house?
Yeah, we believe some of them will, but then again, Mark, just based on my experience in making water leak repairs out there, it has taken us a long time just to shut down a dwelling. In most cases there, we believe one pipe will serve two condo units there, so we'll have to do a split off and put in 2 meters of that.
Well, then I could also assume that the difference in what they're paying now and the bill going down below what it was on their tax roll should cover pretty much a good part of the installation.
But the other part of me says that this particular association pays everything up from the exterior on out, so maybe the cost ought to be on the exterior, on the HOA rather than the homeowner. But that's an option for the individual HOA to make that decision. Does that $200 to $600 charge go to the individual unit, or does the HOA?
Well, I mean, we charge them on their tax roll per individual unit.
Yeah.
So the meter cost will go to the individual unit, not the HOA.
Right, right. Yeah, I just agree with Ray. They own from the paint in, but as far as utilities and those type of things, they're responsible for whatever utilities are bringing their stuff in.
Any other comments? Comments from the audience?
Keep this one to death.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
are we clear?
We got to decide how we want to do this, and it's either going to be to put the meters in, which I believe is the correct way to do it.
Yeah, do you want to actually?
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
If that's a direction the board wants to go, can you give staff maybe 30 days to vet that out internally? And see what it would take, and then also do your audit simultaneously, 30 to 60 days, and bring it back.
How's that going to affect their pay, the timeline, and also what they're paying currently, and the double pay?
Well,
is there a way for us to correct that?
You're immediately suspending the effective.
No, we're not.
If the board adopts staff's recommendation tonight, the board will be suspending the water meter billing on the project.
Can I make a difference?
suggestion. Instead of suspending them, why don't we cut it in half because they would be paying one half of that. The complaint is that they're paying twice for the water right now. If we bill them, I mean, I think
a good suggestion.
Go ahead.
And I say this because it's a little bit of what Mr. Erickson said and a little bit what I think the feel I'm getting from the board. I would keep doing what we're doing, and I mean, here's the issue. I don't want to see us slow down the timeline of getting their meters in. What I did hear powerfully from the board is let's go ahead and move forward with this. So I hate to wait 30 days and have a recommendation come back to the board. I'd like to see us get started on it right now. And in the meantime, they need to pay their bills the way that we've got them right now. And then if something needs to be done to modify that, which I'm sure, well, just putting in the meters is going to modify it. But if there's anything about this interim period of where we're drawing the line in the sand now and between the meters, then we make that decision at that time. But right now, it seems a little premature.
Well, my problem with it is that they're being billed correctly per...
Like the other ones.
The way we set up our rates.
Right.
So it's not fair for us to say, okay, for you guys, we're going to change, but make this other rate when that's what it is. We are mitigating your problem by putting meters in. And that's and until that happens, I believe you pay the rates that they are.
Good point. Treat everybody fairly.
And if, you know, that's what you think.
Am I hearing you people say that we're getting two bottles of water, quantity of water, and we should pay for them? Or am I getting one bottle of water and paying for it twice?
I think what you're hearing is if you want one bottle of water, we put the meters on. That doesn't seem to be something you want to do until everybody else does. So if you don't want to do and get your one bottle of water, then I guess we're going to have two. Because putting the meters on seems to handle the situation.
But if you do it one way, putting the meters on, then you shouldn't be charging us for the back water and the current water. Because we're paying for that one bottle of water twice.
How do you have a number? Do you have a number with how much you think that we should give you back?
Yes, in my statement here, it said we would pay for the installation of the meters and have the refund of the dollars that were attributed to water usage since they were put in, refunded to us. Then you go ahead and put the meters in, then we're all equitable. But during this period of time, we're not being charged for the water twice.
I hear what you're saying. And I appreciate where you're coming from, but I feel like we're going to put ourselves in a position where we're going to have everybody coming to us looking for a refund. And I think we have a good compromise here by going down the road in the meters.
A compromise is that we go ahead and continue to pay, and then you put in meters, so we're doing both.
I think the staff recommendation is to spit in the structure in the meantime,
but I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're hearing repetitive testimony and no problem. No, I agree with, I think, all the directors, but especially Director Tetrault. And again, it is splitting a baby. It's a very difficult decision to make. I've said it a million times. I feel like it's not fair. But we deal with it until the meters come in. If the minute we start going and saying, well, you're a special case and we're going to give you some money back, then, as Director Dawson pointed out, and Director Tetrault, we're setting a really bad precedent, and I personally can't do that. What I can do is support the board, support you in your desire to get water meters, and really push staff, because it is a big undertaking, to get those in immediately. That's where I stand.
Any other comment? Any other comments from the audience?
Thank you, Vice President Simon. Not to really get into one way or the other, but I just want to support the precedent thing, because with the recommendation that the general manager was saying, you've got Sand Bay and potentially some other ones. And if you did something here with that recommendation, you've got potential other problems. So whatever you do decide, and if you did make that decision, you're really setting the precedent for the other ones as well. So whatever you do, that's the big thing, is whatever precedent you're going to do for all of them. Thank you.
Okay, I think the goal here, the board is in total agreement, the goal here is to solve the problem and again now, going forward.
Yeah, I would just make a motion that we direct staff to initiate an audit concurrent with a action to begin installation, an installation program of the water meters on, I'm sorry, what's Harbor the name of Harbor Bay, and concurrently bring back a report of the audit to the board of directors.
What's the audit?
The audit is how many associations we have that this affects in this way and how it affects the other associations at all. But yes, good clarifying question. Thank you.
Okay, let's maybe put a timeline on that also so we know the time of the essence here.
I think
should be able to do this.
30 days?
Yeah.
30 days? Is that acceptable? Yeah. Okay, that would be my motion.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Randall.
So for the first meeting, I tell.
Yeah. Any further discussion? Discussion from the audience? Call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. I'm sorry, 4-0.
Thank you.
Someone want to get Kevin?
Yeah. If you want a hole out, you want to start with that right now? If you would.
We're ready for item F3.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. Thank you, President Graves. This is a follow-up to our board workshop that we held, board held last week on August 25th, regarding a discussion of CSD law and some confusion that was surrounding the title of CSD board treasurer. Government code section 61052A states that the county treasurer of the principal county shall be the treasurer of the district and shall be the depository and have the custody of all the district's money. Due to the fact that our appointed board treasurer doesn't perform those functions because he's not charged to perform those functions, and those functions and that title is inconsistent with state law, we discussed the necessity of removing the title of treasurer from the list of board titles. Well, so I wanted to, since it didn't seem to be a lot of discussion or hesitation to that, I wanted to go ahead and get that to the board as soon as possible. The other subject matter that came up at that same meeting, and we were in the same discussion, resolved around the position of president pro tempore. And in that position is generally a position that if the board president and vice president were not available for one reason or another, they would then have the opportunity, there would then be an appointed successor chairperson, if you will, successor president, to conduct the business of the district. And it appeared that that was the desire of the board at the time, and so I wanted to go ahead and bring that, eliminate the board treasurer position and add the position of president pro tempore. So that is before you tonight. And I'm sorry it was on consent. It was just an oversight on my part. It should have been on consent.
Right. Yeah, I agree with the treasurer thing. I mean, we're pretty well locked in. It's law. But as I, in my mind, it was, I think we decided that in the event, which may be one a millennium, that the vice president and president wouldn't be here and somebody had to run the meeting, that we just appoint a pro tem during that meeting just to have a director call that title. It's like the treasurer. It's another title that doesn't do anything. So, you know, we should have this, the president, the vice president, and in the unlikely event, but it could happen that there isn't the president or vice president, then we assign somebody for that meeting to be the pro tem. That's the way I'd like to see it.
Comment?
Yes. The one, I understand where Ray's coming from. We've had this conversation yesterday. We discussed this matter. And the difficulty in doing it on a case-by-case basis is that if you have a board of three, you might not get to a consensus. You might not get to a 2-1. It could be going back and forth on life, depending on the makeup of the board and how well the board, those three board members get along. Someone might want one person, someone might want another person, and you don't have the ability to do so because you can't get votes in order to appoint the person. So that's the only caveat I would throw into that.
David?
Yeah, I'm going to throw a caveat too, and I'm sorry to disagree with you on this one, Ray, because we're actually being agreeable tonight. I did check with other boards because I was checking on this parliamentary procedure that we brought forth last time that unfortunately nobody seems to have heard of, but anyway, I don't want to get into that. Pro tem is a very, very common practice amongst most boards. In fact, I had a hard time finding a board that didn't have one. Our oversight that we haven't done this. For the most part, they are done annually exactly for the reason that our general manager pointed out. I see the bigger issue tonight is, do we fill it tonight? And, you know, do we consider it? Ray, you're right. It's a title. But it's that person can be activated at any time when we're down. So it really doesn't, kind of giving somebody something that doesn't cost us anything, and actually that person steps up to the plate if we do go down and end up with three people here. And then it stops the whole controversy of voting on who gets to be the king for the night. Sorry, future Leo. So I do agree. I think we should do it. It should be an annual position. It should be a title. I don't know if it's on here to fill the position, so I guess we would do it tonight. I'm in support of the recommended action.
Any other comments from the board? Comments from the public? Hearing none?
Motion. Are we going to tie both these motions together?
Point of order, Mr.
Yes.
President.
Yes.
Even though the staff report contains language of both adopting the resolution as well as appointing the position, the agenda does not. The agenda only has adoption of the resolution. I would therefore recommend that you put on the next agenda appointment of somebody to fill that position.
You can't.
The resolution covers the elimination of the title.
Actually, they're both on here.
Yeah, they are.
They're both on here.
Yeah.
It says eliminate the title of treasurer and add president pro tem.
I'm looking at the agenda.
D5.
I have eliminate the title of treasurer from the list of board of director titles and add president pro tempore and adopt resolution 2010-13 acknowledging this change.
But it's in the recommended actions.
It's in the staff report contains both. Mm-hmm. The resolution, in my opinion, does not inform the community that you are going to be appointing somebody to fill that position should you adopt the resolution.
We're being technical about it.
I'll make the motion that we adopt resolution 2010-13, which will eliminate the title of treasurer from the list of board titles.
And add the title.
We're just not picking them tonight.
And adopt the resolution. Okay.
I'll second that motion.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Committee reports? Any?
Yeah.
You get down there, do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You ready? I'm ready.
Okay. Code enforcement? I did go to a code enforcement last Thursday, the 26th, that held at Supervisor Pipo's office. All were in attendance. I've got a written report here to hand in. The county continues to do their sign removal program, everything from out on Highway 4, where we get people just put signs up. And I hope you all know political signs are exempt, don't you, Walter? Because I know a lot of people have called me and asked about your signs and probably have called this office as well. But they are exempt. The only issue that comes up, and I'm not picking on you, Walter, because I know there'll be other candidates that put their signs up, but you got to keep them out of the Caltrans right away, because they do knock weeds down at this time of year, and they actually go right over the signs and turn them into confetti. So anyway, the county's working on that, but they will leave the political signs alone. They're continuing to work on their abandoned vehicle program. They do get, there's some type of federal grant where they get money for vehicles that are on the side of the road and in driveways that are not being driven. And I think it's about $160 per vehicle. So they're continuing on that. Byron has a couple of issues going on in their community. Antique Tom's is one of them. They just finished their cleanup day that I believe the County Board of Supervisors hosts. Knightson is continuing their work on downtown 80 and 90 Broadway. They've got people working without permits, so the county does keep an eye on that stuff. In Discovery Bay, probably the items of interest, ongoing boats and trailers. I see on many roads, just as I drive down the boulevard, we've got a lot of trailers that sit out without boats on them, and that presents a hazard of people not seeing them and running into them, so they work on that. Multiple complaints of, we have this pop up quite often in courts, but specifically Shell Court, where we have RVs, boats. It's already tight in some of these courts because the roads are short and small, and we've received quite a few complaints in that area. Not a huge item of interest, but we did make a complaint about Hoffman's storage sign out on the highway, and they have gone ahead and replaced that sign. It was probably 20 years old and all faded. So they put a new sign up, looks much better. Notice to comply, Ms. Richardson left, but, I didn't see you back there. They have put a notice to comply to the gentleman up in front that had the aquatic weed. The county is also looking into anyone that's removing those without a license, without a contractor's license. Many of us in here have heard that ripping the weeds up spreads the weeds, and we've got folks out there that are trying to tear them up and creating a worse circumstance. So we encourage you to work through the Department of Boating Waterways, this board, Rec 800, to find out how to get a handle on this. But right now, that's dangerous work, and we've got people out there possibly doing things that could get them in some serious trouble. Health hazard, life hazard, you get tangled up in those weeds, you could get into some trouble. Anyway, moving on, the last one is Sandy Cove's, a Straw Hat Pizza. I've received several complaints. As we all know, that when that complex was built, the signage over there, the ordinance, was very, very strict. They have to go through a whole process just to put an open or closed sign in their windows. Straw Hat Pizza, while we're encouraging their business over there, they're parking very big vehicles over there with big Straw Hat Pizza things on the side. They've got a truck that they're moving around the parking lot, so code enforcement is dealing with that. That's all we had for this month's meeting, and if anybody has anything in the community, they're always welcome to come get a form here at the CSD office or contact myself or code enforcement through the supervisor's office. Thank you.
Any questions about code enforcement? I have one, David. If somebody's working on their behind their own home, clearing out the weeds, does that fall under the same category as being able to paint your own house, or does that mean you have to have a license to clean behind your own house?
I don't have the exact answer for that, but I would guess that they would be able to do it on their own as long as they're not operating it as a business. But there are certain things.
Contractor law would come into play. Yeah. Over $500, it would
exactly.
Be,
okay. And I think that's what the county's looking into. That's what they've been asked to look into. Obviously, you can do a lot of work on your own house, but there's certain things that you need permits to do. Changing out a water heater. Not everybody does it, but technically you're supposed to have a permit. So I'm sure you can do what you need to in your own backyard. When you start operating as a business, you should have a business license and be qualified.
Any other committee reports? Okay. Director's comments. Ryan?
Just wanted to say I attended the August 9th P6 meeting. That's my report. Nothing really happened. There was an ad hoc patrol car committee meeting that wasn't held because they didn't have a quorum. Nothing is really going on right now with the P6 committee. They're trying to get official numbers from the sheriff on the CAP fund, and that's kind of holding things up, but I think they'll get that addressed very soon. The other thing I wanted to talk about was I've heard from quite a few members in the community that we as a board are not doing, you know, what we can to deal with the Jerry Adinsa. And I just want everyone to know that our GM met with Iris Obregon, from Assemblywoman Buchanan's office, and on the 23rd of August, Assemblymember Buchanan wrote a letter to the Department of Voting and Waterways asking for them to do something about this. So we are working through our advisory powers and working with the people who can actually help us in this situation. And I just wanted that known and out there. So thank you.
Other directors? David?
Yeah, quite often I bring in literature from other water districts, and Central Sam is one of my favorites because they produce a really, really nice pamphlet. And I'm going to turn this into the GM and to Virgil as well. I really think all the directors should take a look at this. Our staff should take a look at this. This is probably one of the best ones they've done so far. It talks about kind of cradle to grave with their process, what they're doing, their rates, how the district's saving money. One of Virgil's favorites, where to safely dispose of unwanted medications, not down the toilet. Pollution prevention, what happens when you hit the silver handle. Again, a lot of this is, Virgil, right up your alley. And I think it's really good, and I think at some point, while this isn't their annual report to their consumers, it's a good piece of literature that really could save this district some money over the long run if we invested in an expense of printing something like this up. So I just turned that in for the board members to look at. The other one, which I've already said, so I'll keep it short, but I do want to acknowledge Rick Howard, who is still relatively getting his feet wet, and these agenda reports, how very, very helpful they are, at least for me as a director, in crunching down what we've got to look at and at least letting us know your thoughts ahead of time so we can think about it before we get here and have to hear about it. So thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Brian brought up the weed problem. It's on Rec 800's agenda for tomorrow. They meet over at the old shopping center at 10 o'clock, and I noticed that it is, the weed is one of the issues on their agenda, if anyone's interested.
General Manager's report.
I've got two items for you this evening. The first, Gerald Smart, or Aaron, are you going to give the report?
Gerald
Smart is going to, from Viola, is going to give their monthly operations report. Peter, go ahead.
Good evening. You have all the monthly operations report, the full report. It was suggested that I develop just a single page or so. I struggle with doing one pages, so I do have a couple pages here, but it goes fairly quickly. If you want to put that into the slideshow, that would be good. So what I did is I just highlighted some of the items out of the full report. We'll talk about some of those things. I just kind of picked through a few things. You have read through the report, I assume, at least in part, and so you may have some questions. I'd be more than happy to answer any of those questions when I'm done. Okay? So one of the first things I'd like to tell you is there were no sanitary sewer overflow violations. We also didn't have any water violations. But we did have a total coliform daily maximum exceedance. What happened was is that on July 16th, there was a return activated sludge pump that failed from plant one. When that pump fails, we're not notified of it until the end result, which means that pump is not pulling solids out of the clarifier solids builds up, it overflows out the weirs. It travels across to plant two, goes through an NTU sensor, it measures a high level, that calls us out. Well, by the time we got called out, got there and found the problem, which or didn't get called out, but when we got there the next morning and found the problem, we put it back on. Now, our result was about 300 MPN. We have a daily maximum of 240. And we collected the sample as required by the permit, but I'm not sure exactly when the 16th was, but the lab was closed. And so we take the sample, we put it in the refrigerator, and then the first chance we get, we take it into the laboratory over at Stockton to have it analyzed for total coliform. We reported it to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and they said, well, you did a good job, you collected the sample, but we realized that the lab was closed, that's not your fault, so there will be no violations. And that is something we're kind of, it's kind of a theme we're working with them, because we do collect a lot of times at night, and you only have a 6-hour hold time, so, okay. Pictures that I've included were just for your enjoyment.
Or not.
Or not. Okay, just to page some summary and some highlights. Not in any particular order, but I'm talking about on the right side of the page, you'll see we had 56 call-outs. That's a lot more than we usually have. 23 of those were for the chlorine injection issues that we have at the pumps at the water treatment plant. We have purchased two different types of peristaltic injection pumps. The second set seems to be working very well for us. We also had 9 false alerts. These are calls that we get. We come out to the plant, we investigate, there's no issue. We submitted a plant classification to the state. We feel that the plant that we have will continue to be a grade 2, but there has been some discussion that because of the complexity of the new ultraviolet system, that may be an issue with the state to want to raise the classification requirements, which means you have to have a different level of licensure for an operator. The regional board has contacted me. They're looking at opening up possibly the permit to review some of the language in the permit, because they realize that because we are a secondary treatment facility and we're being directed using tertiary requirements, it's not very fair. So that is possibly being opened up. If we're lucky, we're going to change the current NTU limit, which is the turbidity limit, down to or up to maybe 20. That would be very good, because most of ours are well below 10, but sometimes it does go above 10, but it doesn't go above 20 often, at an hourly average. And the ESMR, this is the electronic self-monitoring report. This has been mandated. The state board said, we want you to have this now, so we've been working with the state trying to develop this. It is a very complicated form. We submitted a full electronic SMR this last month. We'll wait for their comments and see how well we did. The ARVs, the air relief valves, we've inspected a number of those. There are a few left out that have that are in vaults or are out in the street, so we want to make sure we develop a work plan. So when we're out there with the big truck flushing these out, we're in pretty good shape. Now, there was a report generated. I think Virgil had a group go out and run through the all the vaults and the back, the what were they called? The clean outs. And they did a report. And some of these, they reported, are not functioning. And what we have found when we went back out to flush them is that, like, the bottom handle is frozen on. And so that's something that we'll have to address. We repaired the boom truck and the Aquatech. There was some damage that was done back in 09 to a fender. We had all that repaired. We put some new packing glands in and packing gland bolts in lift station F. There was some other works on other lift stations I've omitted here. We repaired a belt filter sump pump. We purchased, I told you about the two flex flow pumps that we purchased for the chemical injection. Well 6 has gone through a complete electrical test, right?
Not a complete electrical test? Pre-electrical test.
Okay. Out in our aerated digester, we pulled one aerator out, had it repaired, put back in, and pulled the third one out. In plant 1, we have an aux ditch that has some rotor work that was done. They came out, hooked onto them with giant cranes, pulled them out. We had 2 of those repaired. And last, we have hired a new person. His name is Charles Norris. He has moved here to Discovery Bay, which is a very good thing, because one, we're hiring people that are living in Discovery Bay, and two, we have people in Discovery Bay who can respond quickly to some of the needs that we seem to be having. And he's very happy to be here and very glad to be on board. Okay? And that's really all I have for that. That next picture, if you just want to show it, again, for entertainment. I don't know. I don't know if you can see that very well. That's just some of the activities going out there. We're putting in a bypass to manage some of the turbidity units and turbidity issues out there. And it's a pretty involved process. And actually, I've had Virgil out there at 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, helping us out, watching, overseeing that operation, and making sure that that's working for us. So thanks, Virgil, for your help.
I think you're stealing some of Virgil's thunder.
No. On this particular project, I will, we're still working on this project, and I will bring some photos to you on that, probably at your next board meeting, and on this particular project.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Unless you have any questions,
I mean, answer a couple questions.
Sure.
This pump failure.
Yeah.
I was under the impression all of our pumps had alarms on them, or I had. Would notify if the pump failed, we would be notified. Is that incorrect?
That is incorrect.
It's
there are many pumps that if failed, we don't have communication into the SCADA system in plant one that will notify us that there is a problem. We have power failure. We can see the results of some of this equipment failure in our F1, which would be the turbidity. But RAS pumps, we do have some for high lift station, but not all.
These pumps go down without notice, and there's no...
They can just quit without any rhyme or
reason. Excuse me? Do they normally go down without any notice? Without making noise, without acting strange, without...
Oh, the squealing noise.
Starting wrong.
We've had them just stop or lose prime, or for whatever reason, maybe a power glitch or something that might cause them to go out. But yeah, unless you're standing right there and you happen to notice it, you're not going to notice it. And if you're home, certainly not
going to
know.
The two vehicles that were damaged in 2009, in as much as they're owned by the town, were there other vehicles involved in the accidents with them, or was this just a...
No, we just got too close to the edge to a bollard.
And they were put back to factory specs?
No, I actually, we bought a whole new fender and had it painted, and Jennifer installed it. Looks great.
I have a question. Now that the state, you know, loosens up the turbidity, from 10 to 20, I mean, does that mean we didn't need to build this bypass?
No.
Okay.
There will be times when I will be going over 20 if I'm out there cleaning a clarifier.
But we just won't need it as often, which is a good thing.
We won't be getting 3 or 4 calls a week for just natural sloughing, which we do now.
Any other questions for Gerald? Virgil, do you have a presentation also? Or?
I have just some shots that I want to show you as it relates to two projects.
Okay.
I'm sure they're much better than this. This was taken with my phone.
Well, are we going to...
Walter, did you have something?
Walter McCurdy, thank you, President Gray. A couple of Saturdays ago, and I think from past experience, was there a scheduled flushing of the system in a certain area? Because I know I woke up and had extremely dirty water throughout my house.
Did you call in and file a report? Just out of curiosity.
They said they opened up the fire.
Go ahead and answer that, Gerald.
We did get some calls. I think it was 2 weeks ago. We had two Saturdays ago. And what we did is we took all the calls that Monday. We put them all together. We mapped them out on a wall map, and we found that they were mostly on the west side of the facility. And what we do is, and typically what the American Water Works says to do is that you flush beginning at the water treatment source, or the source, the wells, which would be, in this case, would be Newport, and then you flush out from the
storage
tanks. Out from there, from the storage tanks out. So we started there and started moving through each of the villages north. We picked a few specialty locations. We worked with the town of Discovery Bay. Virgil actually wanted to do one of the under bay crossings, and see what that looked like. We flushed that. We did see some iron there, and that's what it is. It's just it's natural minerals that's in the wells across the nation. It's iron and manganese. You probably get more iron and manganese in your diet every day. But that's what colors that water, Walter, is when you inject chlorine, you change that iron structure from a liquid, let's say, to a solid, and it turns it a rust color. And what happens is over time, and you filter that out, but sometimes it doesn't all get filtered out, very small amounts, but over time, those rust particles will find low spots, slow moving spots, dead end pipes, that sort of thing, and over time that builds up. And then when you turn the water on, such as we've been doing a lot of in August here, we go to the fire hydrants and turn them open, and we fill our trucks. Well, when you do that, the velocity in those pipes increase considerably. And when that happens, it picks up that sediment, and if you happen to be on a house on that line where you do that, that can actually come into your home. We've been flushing for about 7 days straight now, and we've kind of split our staff up. They come in the morning, and then they go home, and they come back again at night and work for 3, 4, 5 hours at night to do that. And we've also seen a high increase of water demand at night, which means the velocity's increased. But I think it's from irrigation. And because the sediment is built up in some of the lower levels of the pipes, and because the velocity has increased considerably, you get up in the morning and there's some brown water in there. I think we're on pretty good shape right now. We only had 2 reports last weekend, and maybe I think we've had 2 this week. And we will continue to see a few calls, because the way you get it out of the system is by opening up a fire hydrant and flushing it out, which means you're going to stir it up. And that's what happened.
It was flushing. I just didn't know if there's a way to kind of alert people, because I know it's pretty shocking to a lot of people when they get up, and if somebody goes and just is throwing in stuff into their washing machine, it's not going to be a pleasant experience, especially if they're washing whites.
We've been trying to...
I don't know if there's a certain time of year that you're doing this, if there's a way to kind of notify people if there's a certain month you're doing this.
We will be looking at we're building a long-term plan now, which will probably be more likely in the wintertime, when the amount of flow is down, you're not irrigating so much, and that's probably when we're going to do the long-term. We'll do like the 11 bay crossings over on the east side of the town and continue to do that on an annual basis, and as needed too, because someone might call in and say, hey, there's a spot over here, you know, it builds up. We don't really know how much it's going to take to build, you know, we've only been here for a short time, so we'll address those when we come in. So we've been encouraging everybody, and we've called everybody that did call in to call us back and let us know how we got. And we wrote up a bunch of flyers and hand passed them out, but that's a big chore, 16,000 people, and we're trying to hand out, you know, we're trying to keep it isolated to the areas that we're working, so we might hand out 20 or 30 flyers at the homes next to the hydrant that we're flushing. So we can do better, we'll try.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
My name is Roger DeBate, and I've been a process control engineer for over 30 years, and I've seen the system that Virgil has here in the water management. You know, the cheapest thing you can do is automate the process that you have with alarms and flow meters and things like that, because that computer is monitoring your system 24 hours a day, and it has automatic capability to notify these gentlemen when the transfer pump doesn't start and the digester gets clogged up. And these are cheap investments. That pump, when it failed to start or not run, that's a micro switch you add on the motor. That's how cheap it is, okay? We have the software, we've got the architecture, we've got the communication system in. but you were not utilizing it correctly. Even to the point where this gentleman said, I mean, you're going to replace the pump, but you're not going to put any monitoring on it to make sure this problem doesn't happen again. Did I hear that correctly?
Well, it's not that we're not going to do it. It's just not there at this time.
Yeah. We need to adopt a program that utilizes the technology that we already bought and paid for. It's here. It's in our hand. It's right outside. We're just not connecting up to it and utilizing it. I'd like to recommend that you do that. Have somebody go through, empower this gentleman to write a report for you, and connect up to the real-time system that monitors our equipment 24 hours a day, and keep those penalties. These penalties that we incur are big money when we have to dump effluent in raw forms and things of that nature. Very big money. The real-time system is here to protect us. Let's use it. Thank you.
Cheryl, how much have we paid in fines over the last year, do you know?
$12,000?
Nothing.
$12,000?
I think
from
last year.
Oh,
yeah, right.
We haven't had any fines assessed this year. I don't know that we would, because I don't think we've had a single violation this year. This was the first violation, and they kind of said, well, you did the best you could. We know you could get the lab. The data's really not valid, so we're not going to assess it. Yeah,
I've seen some of their violations, and some of their violations are as simple as, you know, for some reason it wasn't submitted in quadruple. It was only in triplicate. And I mean, some of these violations are that ridiculous, but there haven't been any substantial violations because of any sort of lack of monitoring.
Now that's a different question. There are no violations with penalties associated with it, which is an effluent limit violation.
Okay.
There are violations for things such as, well, you got a weed out there. We don't want you having a weed out there. Your permit says you shouldn't have a weed, so we're going to write it up. Get your weed out there. Okay. Now, there are some that require monitoring, and that's what you just alluded to. And because the system hasn't completely been completed on the UV, the ultraviolet disinfection system, we cannot record dose at this time. In order to record dose, you have to have the system running auto, and we haven't got the entire bank system completely given us the okay by Trojan and been completely evaluated yet, although it's something we've been working on for months now, pulling this together. Until that happens, they will continue to say you're in violation.
Does our SCADA system, is it being used to the best of its ability at this point for what we have installed? Do we have the alarms? We're supposed to have the alarms. Is it reading like it's supposed to read? Are we still having issues with the SCADA system, or is what this gentleman's saying here, we have a system that's not being utilized, is that true?
For the ultraviolet disinfection system, we are pulling out all the data that we can possibly pull out to meet the reporting program and monitoring requirements of the permit. There are a lot of things in that permit that we don't feel that we should have to report, such as how many gallons per day per lamp, or 480 lamps that are in that system. So, you know, each time. So what you want to do is just say you have to monitor dose, but we can't do that yet because we can't put it in auto. That's the one side. The other side is that the SCADA system can, we have not got all the wiring and the connections made from the pumps into the system to pull that data in as far as a pump failure in plant one.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Gerald. Appreciate it.
Just to elaborate, I agree we should probably have all pumps and motors on the SCADA system, but it isn't as simple as putting a micro switch there. You have to put instrumental wire through there, so it's conduits. We don't have electrical banks. We'll be underground banks. These are pipelines underneath. We don't have spares, and then we have to open trench that to bring those in, the signals, in order to connect that micro switch and bring that signal back. This is an older plant, so it wasn't really designed for that. So as we catch them, we then put them on our list as a
probably a priority to put them on and see what it would cost to get that onto the switch. You have to evaluate, you know, based on the cost.
Thank you, Bernie.
I do want to show you the, this is kind of going to skip through here. This is on the bottom there. This is your piping that you, it's going to go through there. That's the piping that we put in on Discovery Point to replace a clay pipe. Remember, from manhole to manhole, we, right here is the bottom part of the pipe. It's 17 feet deep at one end, 14 feet at the other. These metal plates, this is a little bullet item here that's in front of the pipe, and as it goes down in through the street, this is a, right here in front of you, is a piece of that pipe, what we're putting in the street. And what we did is we pulled this in to the clay pipe, and as we were going through underground, we opened a big hole, put that little bullet-shaped device through there, and as it went through there, it sliced the clay pipe and pulled in this one long piece of pipe in there. It's called pipe bursting. So this is the long piece that wrapped all the way around Lidl Circle, as you can see it. And these are the plates. What we do here is you find all the home connections that are connected in to your main running up and down the street. You open that first, you trench that down. We have to put these in there at the time you're 5 feet deeper. You have to put those shoring in. And then we pipe burst. Again, this is your little bullet item here with the cable. It pulls right through your clay pipe, and that's what we got.
Was that 450 feet of that went in at one time?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct, yeah. But this is the type of pipe that went in to replace the clay pipe. One solid piece, all you did was fused it or weld it, for better terminology, in 40-foot sections.
What's the service life on that?
Pardon me?
How long is the service life?
We believe it to be 60 to 80 years. Let me go to your UV project. And on this one here, some of the things are going to skip around. This is the UV. We had to demo all the concrete here and all this here, and then put some new wiring in. This is still the wiring, showing you how many inches. That's 12 inches actually. And then we, I have a few more pictures there. This is what it kind of looks like when we demo this out. We have to demo it, make sure none of it gets in to our sewer system, which is running right next door. So you don't want any of this rocks and stuff getting in. This is the finished product after we put the grout in there. This is what we did. What we needed to do is to close that channel in because of the newer UV equipment was skinnier and long, so we needed to close that channel in. And we had to have a difference, a tolerance of a no more than a quarter inch on the sides. That's how close we had to be on that. Let me show you another little section. This is what the new UV system looks like today. This is a new UV system. This is the existing UV system. And this is how it looks. The lamps are all down in here. This is the control center for that. And this is a hydraulic system. This is new for us. What these hydraulics do is, in the older system here, the lamps have to be pulled out by a crane that's up to here, dipped in an acid to be cleaned. Gerald, I believe, or Veolia, people do it about every week or every 2 weeks to clean that. With the hydraulic system here, what it does is it has kind of a self-cleaning device on it that cleans the tubes, that eliminates the operators from having to remove this section and dip it into any type of chemical solution to clean it. So the newer system is in. We are now just dialing in on the what we call the SCADA system and a couple of loose ends there, and then we'll be ready to operate on that. Next time I will give you, we'll talk to you about some of the construction we've been doing on the what we call the bypass, the UV bypass, and another
project. Just for clarification, that UV is at the very end of the line, and all the water that's processed, all the waste that's processed when it, at the very last step before it
goes back into Old River, goes through a UV, process to kill what, Virgil?
It's the ultraviolet.
But it kills the bacteria?
Viruses and bacteria that may be in the water.
It's the very last step in a secondary process.
And it's hard to see with the naked eye. That's it.
Thank you. Anything else from you, Rick? You don't have any pictures to show?
No, not tonight.
I got some pictures to show.
Let's move on.
Legal counsel.
None, sir.
Thank you. I'd like to actually welcome Dan Schroeder. I should have done this earlier. Dan introduced you, but Dan's sitting in for Mike McGrew tonight, who's on vacation. And you've been out here before, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much for being here. Correspondence listed, public records listed. Any future agenda items?
Adjournments. Any future adjournments?
Any going, gone. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, sir.